you say?
Hit the road, Jack, and don't you come back no more, no more, no more, no more. Hit the road, Jack, and don't you come back no more.
Oh, woman, don't treat me so mean. You're the meanest old woman that I've ever seen. I guess if you say so, I'll have to pack my things and go.
Hello, welcome to the Scotch Cast. This is the Giant Bomb Guild Wars 2 Communities off-topic podcast. I'm your host, Self-Vest Cynic, and joining me today is Thurbleton.
Greetings and salutations, one and all.
Yeah, it's going for a mellow opening today. Did you come off that intro? I don't know if this will work with the music we've had planned for the show, if I get it. Squids is also joining me today. What's up, Squiddle?
Hi! Hi, everyone. How you doing? Welcome back to hearing me. Yes, I'm back. Thank you.
You'll be hearing him twice this week if everything goes as planned. Oh, God. Yeah, so this is the Scotch Cast. It may go up before or after the Lincoln Cast, but either way, there'll be two recordings this week, so look out for that on the same RSS. Don't worry about that. This episode is definitely going to be done because we have so much news to talk about, so we needed to do a Scotch Cast this week. Steam stuff, Persona 5. Etc. I needed to say it out loud. It's Persona 5.
You are really, really excited for Persona 5.
Oh my god. You have no idea. But before we get to there, what we've been playing. Who wants to go first? Squiddle? You probably got the least, I assume.
I'll go first because I've been very tiny in my gameplay. I think the most I played is the new Infinity Blade 3 on the iPhone.
Awesome.
It's such a good game.
Did they change much about it?
They did a little bit. It's not as open-y as it used to be.
Really?
It's kind of more linear.
That's actually kind of a little bit of a disappointment. Because yes. I liked how it opened up with the last game.
But the story, but for me, and I've always said before, the story really holds you more. Okay. For me, any story holds me more. I mean, your game can be open world, but if your story is shit, then fuck off. But the game itself has a really good story aspect to it, so it kind of really holds me. I like what they've done with the character developments.
Wait, so do they have mid-game character? Because before, like, we say there's a story, but what that really was is a bunch of stuff in the books, which are awesome. But then you have, like, a thing at the start and a thing at the very end when you fight the final boss. And that's pretty much it. There wasn't much in the middle in terms of story. It was just like the exploration of the world and gleaning from what you can from the environment around you.
Sure. And I haven't gotten into like the middle, I would even say, of the story yet.
Right.
But even from the beginning, you have – so I'll give you an idea. When you start off, you are basically in two. You are dead laying on a stainless steel table. And you wake up. There's nobody around there. And then you walk out onto a cliff of rocks, and it's all gorgeous and everything and beautiful.
Right.
In this one, you know, you start off with a lot of backstory stuff, and then you start off on a table, but there's more people talking to you. It's very Mass Effect-y how they kind of really bring you into it with a bunch of people in an area and all your crew and your friends.
Right.
So that's kind of how I can relate it.
So is
a little
the
bit.
Chick with you? Because the dude from the bottom of that abyss will be with you.
But yeah, in the beginning, where I'm at, I mean, I'm just the beginning, but in playing through the first part, there's a lot of it. But your main character, you're just by yourself as of right now. I haven't seen where she comes in or is a selectable type character yet.
Because she's supposed – well, if they're following the books, then she's the primary love interest for the series. So I don't know how that'll pan out, if it'll pan out at all.
And for me, which sucks, is I have the first book. I bought the second book. I haven't read either of them, but the games have come out, and I want to play. I've beaten one, I've beaten two, and I want to beat three. But I feel I'm torn between reading the first and second book.
You need to read those books,
and then
man.
Beating three before I actually do that.
You need to read those books. The books are good.
And that kind of, and I have about a month. And later on, I will tell you why I have a month before that will happen. So
cool.
I will pass the game torch.
Wait, is this to do with iOS or? Because you can just do that now. Just do it now. Okay. Just do it now. What's up?
I woke up at 3 o'clock in the morning on the day when the iPhone 5S came into this world.
You asshole.
Birthed by the Apple itself. And unfortunately, because between AT&T and Apple, their purchasing things suck. I mean, let's get this straight. They've done this for so many years. At least they could get it so that when I put my information in, it doesn't say that your account has been canceled.
Wow.
Really? My phone account has been. So I finally got in about 40 minutes later, and I was able to make my purchase. And I'm like, cool. All right. Well, oh, damn, October. Okay, that kind of sucks. So I got in late compared to everybody else. And then 2 days later, or not 2 days, about a week later, or 3 days later, it goes, your phone will ship in November 3rd.
Oh.
I'm like, what? Are you kidding me? And I will state that the only reason is because I am one of those douches, if you want, that decided to go with the gold
you
iPhone
idiot.
5S.
What an asshole are you?
Because I want gold!
You have gold.
Gold.
What?
Yes,
oh my god.
Yes.
I was gonna sit here.
With the gold iPhone. Just and here's the kicker. I use a case on my phone that covers up the gold. So I'm being even more of a troll by waiting for the gold one and then covering it up with a case.
Oh, you piece of shit. Oh my god. Okay, all right. So I don't
it'll just big time at Donald Trump style.
I don't judge you by your choice of phone colors, but gold is like the gaudy, chintzy, lame answer.
But that's the point. That's kind of the point to kind of, you know, go, hey, I really don't care what you think. I'm gonna have gold and screw y'all. That's about it.
I mean, like you're sort of owning it now that you like since you did just get an iPhone 5 the day it came out.
Yes.
You are one of those people. So I can understand just owning it up and just going 100% and getting gold covered.
Oh man.
Sure. I mean, I've been with Apple since the 3G. As opposed to phones, I was a Windows phone guy for years. Before that, I was always Windows Phone 5, 5.5, and I absolutely loved it. And then when Apple released the 3G, or 3GS, I'm sorry, was actually when I jumped on board. I was like, yes, I'm doing it. That's it. And I actually have all of my phone cases lined up on my bookshelf right now that I'm looking at. From the 3G to 3GS, 4, 4S, 5, and soon to be 5S.
Man.
So... You know, I may be asinine, but that's I enjoy it. So
as long as you realize that you are being asinine.
Oh yeah, no, I get crap from everybody around me. They're like, "Are you so hardcore?" I'm like, "I'm not hardcore. I like Android. I have an Android tablet. I love both operating systems." But for the way things work in my home here, where I have an Apple TV, I can stream from my phone. It works for me. So you know,
I
love both.
That, yeah. Absolutely nothing wrong. And you know what? You can't get Infinity Blade on Android. And so I will to this day say that iOS is a legitimate gaming platform because
when that new controller comes out from Logitech, yes, I am going to have one. Definitely.
That sounds like crazy talk. Though. I don't know if those devices are built for ever having a physical input attached to them. Like you know what? We'll talk more about controllers later. Passing the torch, Thurbleton. What you been up to?
Not much. I just had a lovely week. The rain season has begun in Portland. I remember there was one dreary day where I just, you know, got done with work and just rain all that. So a bunch of people, why is everyone standing out in the rain? Oh, wait, iPhones came out. Oh,
man.
No.
Of course, there'd be lines in Portland. I'm not surprised at all.
They wanted to be there first.
Why would there be a line in Portland? Isn't that kind of like a desert area or deserted area? No, I guess I'm wrong.
It's also Hipster Central.
Full of desserts.
Hipster Central, man.
Dessert.
Oh, that's not awesome. Anyway, for game-wise, this week has been kind of interesting. There's been a new thing in Gary's Mod that I've been playing around with that's actually a lot of fun, and I hope gets expanded into a full game, which is called Pirate Ship Wars.
Cool. That sounds fun.
Yeah, it's a really tough concept when it comes to making this type of game. Basically, it's your two teams of pirates on ships trying to sink the other ship. And that is really hard because it comes to moving platforms, which this game doesn't get at all, but it's kind of one of the nice parts about it. And it's just like, oh, you're stuck, your foot's stuck in the wooden plank of the main top deck. You gotta jump crouch to get out of it. But it's... It's a really fun, silly thing that
it's first person, right? You're running around.
It's a source engine. It's Gary's Mod.
That's kind of cool.
It's really well done.
Similar to Pirates, Knights, and Vikings-ish? The mod that was for Half-Life 2 back in the day?
Half-Life 1, actually? Pirates, Knights, and Vikings is like it's an arena based. You're on land, running around there. It's playing with that three way fight, which is a lot of fun. That's a very good game. If you got a bunch of friends together, look for it on Steam or something on sale. But this is more. When you spawn in, there's three things you can do. You and your fellow piratical lads. You can take control of the ship by pressing E and manning the steering wheel, and it's very sluggish. Reminds me a lot of manning the battleships in 1942 Battlefield,
right,
way back in the day. Like the thing has weight to it. You're moving this lumbering object, and if your masts get shot down, like if you lose two of your three, like the two main masts, you're moving slower. Like you can turn about, like you can bring the ship about to bring the cannons up, but you're not able to get any distance movement. You can also man the cannons. And that's actually a really fun thing because I'm not sure if they made these choices intentionally or not, but you have vague crosshairs, but you can move the crosshair wherever you want on the screen, and the cannon will only go so far in each direction.
Right. That makes sense.
But your crosshair will go further.
No.
Than what the cannon will.
Yeah, so like if you move your crosshair all the way to the left side of the screen, the cannon will not fire that like all the way to the left side. It will only fire a little bit to the left.
Okay.
And so you gotta focus on the cannon where it stops and then kind of go from there.
Yeah. And then you have to judge your shots visually. And that takes a lot. That's kind of one of the enjoyable parts because you got your moving object, the other moving object, and like you keep having to constantly readjust your shot. So, and then if you hit like a part of the ship, that small part of the ship goes away, and there's a big hole where it was.
That's cool. And
the winning condition is just to sink the other ship and ergo to do enough damage to it through these cannon shots. One of the biggest ways to do damage versus the amount of cannon fire is to hit the mast, which is very hard to do. But if you do it, you do a lot of damage to them.
So
you have sword and musket.
It's kind of like a weird thing because they're kind of going part way. Do they put this all in like piracy speak, like sink or disable? And if you like take down their mask, they slow down, they can't move, and they're disabled. Like is that the kind of speak they use it in, or do they actually use like modern kind of to win this match? You just need to destroy the other ship, and just they have hit points, and you shoot your balls at them, and etc.
Really, just because this is Gary's mod, and like that, because game modes like that are proof of concept prototype ideas that they just throw against the wall and see what sticks and what doesn't.
Right.
There are no there's no tutorial or anything. Just hey, which team do you want to be on? Oh, okay, you're on this team. There's no actual animation movement, so it's just like. A person having their arms out, just like floating about in this pirate outfit.
Right.
Hopefully they're like the people making it are going to keep improving it, but it's stable enough to have fun. And everyone while I was playing with was on a Skype call, and we were just yelling the most pirate speech ever. It was great.
So
I'm digging that already. Yeah.
Does this break down to be like how similar to Guns of Icarus is this? Like, if you were to be honest,
because Guns of Icarus really plays more into the dynamic of like each person has their role.
Right.
It's aerial opposed to being on a ship.
Yeah.
Where like if you jump in the water, magical piranhas come and eat you and you lose your health and whatnot.
Right.
But,
sure.
But yeah, Guns of Icarus, like you have people able to repair the ship, whereas in Pirate Ship Wars, you do not.
Right.
So.
It's
same but different.
Yeah, so it has some similarities, but they're definitely distinct games, is what you'd say.
Yeah, like the person being the ship's like the captaining the ship at the steering wheel can get off that man a cannon, someone else can get on the steering wheel and take over.
Right.
There is no like Call of Duty, Guns of Icarus, like put points in to improve your role sort of thing.
Mm. Okay.
I believe Guns of Icarus has.
I don't know. I haven't played it. All I know is that it sounds a lot similar, like where people actually set themselves to tasks like gunning, like repairing, like driving the ship, etc. So I can see how there'd be similarities there. I just haven't played either, so it's kind of interesting to see that the pirate genre is finally taking off because I don't know how any of these games.
I really enjoy the idea of people like the space team. idea. People have
so
to work
good.
Together cooperatively
yeah.
with just mass chaos and bedlam ensuing
yeah.
and putting that in a PvP sense. I remember a lot of people in the Giant Bomb gaming hub are playing like something like Space Team, like with the Star Trek having to work together, but it's
right.
another game. I can't recall the name of it. When it gets, it's still very early alpha. Mm-hmm. So as it becomes more developed, I'm sure we'll talk about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, that is one of the main games I've been playing. Again, cool. just promoting Gary's mod whenever it's on sale because it's like $2.50.
I would also have to say that I had Gary's mod back like when it was still free. And it was awesome. And I jumped into it the other day and I was like, what have they done to this? There is so much more complexity and
yeah,
things
you can
do
just,
in that game that is just astronomically crazy.
Hmm.
People just getting into it as and seeing it as a sandbox is a detriment to it. Like as soon as you hit the multiplayer, they've made it so that you just see all the different game modes. And like, oh, there is, in a Frog Fraction sort of way, so much more to this game underneath the surface.
Yeah. Yeah. Man.
And again, Frog Fractions is a really good game. You should
oh
try
my
that.
God, Frog Fractions.
Now, I also played a little bit of Kerbal Space Program again.
Oh yeah, I saw you playing that. How was that?
Yeah, it's after the Giant Bomb Unprofessional Friday stream, I tried it out again. It's really fun to just try and go to space or try and make a space station and just seeing how dumb stuff you can make.
Oh man.
I am now convinced that you just need to add more wheels to it. If it doesn't work,
adding more wheels,
let's just add
everything.
More wheels.
I need to watch that so bad. Oh, I'm going to be watching that after this is finished. But yeah, that sounds... Anything else? These games have been out for a while. I don't want to spend too much time on them.
I mean, there have been... like I've been working a little bit on GTA. I think...
How's that going?
There's been a lot of interesting stuff with it. Mm-hmm. I haven't... It's more been friends come over before work and we just play running around stuff.
Okay, cool. So you haven't gone too far deep into the plot yet? Or
no.
Right.
But yeah, that's still a crazy game. Mm. There's still a lot of crazy stuff happening related to it. Actually, earlier today this recording, there was a speedrunning community. I really got into that after the summer speed runs done quick marathon happened. There was a person playing GTA 3 in Vice City just trying to do like a 100% speed run. Had like 9,000 people watching.
It's still going. It's on right now.
It's still going. So that is definitely an interesting thing to just enjoy. To breathe in that media. It had more people watching than GTA 5.
Oh, dude, Vice City. I've just been dipping into that soundtrack and oh my God, it's so good. I think that's the reason why a lot of people have a lot of like fond memories of Vice City, because the radio stations in that game were some of the best things ever.
Yeah, the radio station is amazing for Vice City.
Yeah, dude. Like if GTA 5 just had like a Vice City channel, that would be awesome. But I don't think they'd ever.
I don't know if they could swing that much licensing fee.
Yeah.
Like they made so much money with this game, and I'm sure a lot of it just got thrown out to various people. Like that, I'm sure that the game stores and whatnot had like their cut, but then so much probably went to licensing fees for the music as well,
right?
Because they made like did they pass $1 billion or something? I knew it was more money than like a weekend trip, like box office.
Exactly. It was like 800 million in the first day and 1 billion in 3 days. It was
video games, you guys.
That is multiple times like this rapidity and like size of multiple movies. Like for like the Titanic's a bad example because I think it's in the multiple billions, but like Avengers hit those kind of numbers, but they did so over a couple of weeks. GTA 5 just did it in like 3 days. That is crazy. That is the GTA magic. It'd be crazy to see at the end of the year what actually makes more money between this and Modern Warfare, because I think this is unassailable at the moment, but you never fucking know, because Modern Warfare, next-gen consoles, like people are going to be buying it on both. It's going to be crazy. I don't know.
Yeah. And then the last thing for me that just I watched, finally get around to watching, I'm a big fan of the Hiro Miyazaki films.
Oh, yeah.
And I finally get around to seeing from Up on Poppy Hill. I would recommend it for a couple of reasons. I know a lot of our listeners also enjoy Guild Wars, and just the amount of little detail that is put into different places in that game. as well as just various other stuff. But this is his first film that seems to be 100% grounded in reality. A couple of things are there. He's definitely goes on the more magical side, but I know My Neighbor Totoro is loosely real life, except for the magical creature living next door.
Except for, you know, the
except for the title character. but no, it's just, it takes place in Japan in like just after the Korean War, and it's really, really good.
It's gorgeous as well. Like, I'm just looking at photos for, I haven't watched it yet. I'm just looking at images of it, and this, yeah.
Like the plot is awesome and all that, but the main thing I enjoyed was just all the different like fluff side shots that happen in between scenes, and just the amount of detail. Really good.
See, I actually have the Ghibli collection as well. And I just need to, one of these days I'm going to sit down and just watch all of that, but it's hard because
a Ghibli-thon.
Yeah, because I was like, yeah, I'll do that, and then I watched Princess Mononoke first, and I just felt like so wrought up to that movie. I was like, okay, I can't watch another one at the moment.
That was too sad.
You
can say that later.
And it's also really weird. It's really, really weird. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what have you been up to, self-confessing?
Oh, well, thank you for asking. I have been up to, well, first of all, what I've actually been doing all this week, aside from the little bit of gaming and stuff I've been doing, was sales training for the shitty new job I have, which meant I had to like get up and role play how to sell things. And how did someone was like, that's too expensive. I'm like, well, if you think about it, break the price over 10 years and think it. And oh God, I just felt like hitting my head against the fucking table. 3 days, 8 hours a day of just that, just like how to deal with customers. And I've been doing sales for a bunch of years now, like throughout uni. So it was like one of the least enjoyable training weeks I've ever had in my life. It was just like, oh. But if you want me to sell you a barbecue, I can do it now. Aside from that, though, I've been playing... I put about 30 hours into Fire Emblem Awakening and then my new 3DS XL.
Are you going to get... let's see. Arma is having a tactics game like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like the whole ground-based stuff. Like, mm-hmm. have you... Are still interested in...
turn-based tactics?
Turn-based tactics, but what's the space one that just came? The Enemy Within, the Enemy... XCOM, that's the word.
XCOM, yeah. So, all right. So, XCOM... My main problem with XCOM was that the line-of-sight issues, specifically. So, when you can move a unit into a position, you don't have a good idea of where he can see and what can see him. So, if they fix that for Enemy Within, I'll definitely give it a shot. But I don't think they have said anything along those lines, but I haven't been paying particularly close attention. The problem with... XCOM in general is that the plot's a piece of shit. Like, it's just entirely throwaway, no depth to it. It's just whatever. And with Fire Emblem, I thought that was actually going to be the case until just recently. So, like, apparently the game spans over 26 chapters, and I'm up to chapter 14 now. So I just recruited a important new character who changes the plot in a lot of ways. So up until this point, I had no idea why people liked Fire Emblem, because I'm playing it on hard, which is not the default settings, the one above the default setting. There's normal, hard, and lunatic. So when I looked it up, I was like, okay, what do Fire Emblem players recommend? And they're like, okay, play hard. And then I was like, okay, you have your choice of your difficulty, which is hard, which is apparently is supposed to be as hard as old Fire Emblem games used to be. So people like that difficulty. So I chose that. Then beyond there, you have a sub-selection of classic or casual. So classic is what you hear everyone say, that's how you have to play Fire Emblem. Because if your characters die, they stay dead. And okay, that's cool. What they don't tell you is... Casual is exactly the same as classic, except for, well, if you can choose to play casual the same way you would play classic, but casual gives you more options because you can save mid-battle. So if I want to, for example, okay, so let's rewind a bit. Hey, Thurbleton, have you used Nintendo 3DS?
No, I've not used a Nintendo 3DS, but when it comes to stuff like the turn-based tactics,
mm-hmm.
I am quite interested in how, like, this small subgenre of strategy games has so many different spinoffs. There's XCOM, there's Final Fantasy Tactics, assuming is
Fire Emblem. Tactics. This is different to
Fire Emblem.
I think of Valkyria Chronicles.
Massive Chalice is in development.
Massive Chalice, yeah.
the Banner Saga is almost out. And it's I'm curious what the different nuances are and how, like, if the crowd's favoring each one of those tends to go to the other side, or if they pick sides.
The biggest here's a couple of really big, and it kind of ties into what I was saying before. So the big differences between these games. So the first one is permadeath. So, for example, and how you treat permadeath. So the tactics subgenre looks at it in a couple different ways. You have the Final Fantasy and Valkyria Chronicles way, where when a character dies, they're in a downed state. And they're in a downed state for a number of turns. If those turns die up or get completed, that character is now permadead and you can't rejoin your party. Alternatively, if an enemy goes to their square and attacks that character member while he's downed, then he's completely dead and he won't return to your party. So those two games work that way. XCOM is kind of a gray area because it has permadeath, but it also has a potential for you to avoid permadeath by getting into a critical state. So it's like there's upgrades which enable a Final Fantasy-esque option. But otherwise, it's full on permadeath. And Fire Emblem is the far extreme where it's just permadeath. There's no down state. There are skills that can mitigate it, like Miracle, which will give you a chance to resurrect if you hit 1 HP.
But, as well as there's also like turrets, or like there's robots that you can use.
Yeah, so in XCOM, there's multiple types of like levitating or slow moving ground based robots that you can use as well, and those you can just pump out because they don't really have an upgrade process to them. You just like chuck them out and they can do with their damage. They're generally not as useful as a person, obviously, but they're still pretty cool.
They aren't as vital. They're expendable.
Yeah, they're expendable. They're straight up expendable. So that's one element of it that separates them, how they treat permadeath. And people like it in different ways. I think my personal preference is towards the traditional, like really old school traditional, which is Final Fantasy, Tactics Ogre, I believe, and Valkyria Chronicles, which has dudes go down, you have a couple turns to either resurrect them or finish the fight, and then they're dead. Because the second major difference between all these tactics games is characterization. So you have the basic mechanics, and in terms of all of them, they're all vastly different. So I'm not going to go into these very specifics of how the basic mechanics are different between either ones, unless you have any particular questions. But in my opinion, it's the treatment of death and the characterization that really differentiates these games. Because, for example, Final Fantasy Tactics, you have your main cast of characters, and then you have all these expendable side characters. That's how they treat it. So only a couple people will actually have dialogue, but your party will be much, much larger. In Valkyria Chronicles. Valkyria Chronicles has a very similar thing where you have a main cast of characters as well and a large pool of side characters. But the main cast of characters is a bit larger and they characterize them significantly more than Final Fantasy ever did. So that's a little step above. Now, if you go back the other direction, you have Fire Emblem, where they have a gigantic cast of characters, and all of them are characterized, and all of them have like conversations between each other and all that kind of stuff. But they also have like permadeath, which is kind of a crazy mixture, which a lot of people really like because it makes you care about the characters, but has that always impending possibility of those characters being lost forever, and therefore losing all those conversations and all those interactions with that character, and all those you'd like them, right? And then the opposite direction again, you have XCOM, which is none of your characters mean anything to you.
Like, well, they play with different things. Whereas XCOM has, okay, this character has a rank, has experience, has value, has extra skills added to him.
But like all of them, all of them have
character. Games do that as well.
Yeah,
but they also have the story depth to them as well.
Exactly,
so that is one improvement.
And it's not necessarily improvement; it's just the difference. Because in XCOM, you don't feel too bad if you have to send a soldier to his death. Like, if you know that to win a mission, you need that soldier to die, you're willing to do that. Whereas in Fire Emblem, maybe you'll find a different way, or regret it more, like, obviously.
You definitely regret sending the soldier to die because, assuming you've done that playstyle, that you know that soldier's history, you know what he's been through, and just to throw him away.
Yeah.
I'm kind of curious, Squiddle, are you familiar with, like, you're up to date on Massive Chalice and whatnot.
Great you said that.
Like, the concept, it's still in very alpha.
Yeah.
But
it is, and I know he had, I don't know. I'm a horrible person to ask about that. I did back the Kickstarter, but I have not watched anything about it at this point.
I think as of right now, they've done a few chats about it. They've done a couple of rather interesting things talking about budgeting, not hard numbers, but just like here's roughly what the money would be going to. But what I'm curious about you for the topic is, do you think that like Master Chalice's decision to take permadeath into a much more evolutionary step of like actually being considered into the game, do you think that's going to draw a lot of people in, or is that going to turn some people off?
I'm actually kind of interested in the permadeath aspect. I've never played a game where, you know, if your character's gone, it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And games where I think that would be a real like knee jerk reaction. You know, when you watch a movie, you know, as Cynic was saying, I guess very similar to Fire Emblem, you get to know your characters more than you do in what was the other game we were talking about? I can't throw a blank on the name. XCOM. Thank you. Yeah. And you know, I would love to play a game on a platform that I could play, because I don't have a 3DS. So if I could play a game where I could be like, oh, this is a great character. This is a great little person right here. You know, I like their backstory, and all of a sudden they're dead the next moment because you made a wrong choice.
Yep.
I mean, that would be awesome to play a game where that emotion is tied into it, and then you have to suffer. You have to play through the rest of the game knowing that, man, I made the wrong choice. And then you keep asking yourself, well, am I making the right choice right now? You know, you're second guessing yourself. So the game really becomes more of knowing what you need to do, and but if I make that choice, this is what happens. Am I making the right choice? Do I want this person to be with me, or do I want to take the longer battle as opposed to the shortcut, kill that person, and then I'm there? Or do I say, hey, if I don't and I take a lot longer to do the battle, then great.
Yeah.
You know, now I still have them with me, but you know, it took me forever to get there. So I like that aspect. I mean, it's something not new to gaming, but it is something that not a lot of people have been willing to play with, I believe, because for fear of a publisher saying, well, no one's going to like the game if you kill off the main character or one of the main characters right away.
Right.
So I'm looking forward to it in more games.
Wait, can someone explain how Massive Chalice's permadeath thing works? Because I remember it having to do with your lineage, but I don't remember anything beyond that.
Okay, basically, like in the course of the game, will last several generations.
Yeah.
So people will die of old age or die in battle, and so you're not necessarily remembering the story of the fighter. You remember the story of his lineage, like his family line.
Right.
And it's like, oh, do I send this guy off to his death and everything that family line has accrued and like gathered with experience
right,
and all
because,
that?
Yeah, because how they work is your previous generations.
I don't want to say crossbred, but
like in fire, you know what?
But it makes like sense. It makes sense in this.
Yeah,
you know, at least it brings understanding.
Like it's the way traits are improved and whatnot is through marriage of the different lineages and lines.
Well,
and you can choose to either keep him out as he gets older and older, or put him to pasture and start rearing.
A really cool little step to it because
sounds kind of awkward talking about it. I don't want to use these
words.
I'm
going to take Old Yeller and take him to the back, and I'm going to put a bullet in him.
I mean, I'm straight up doing what do they call it? You know the thing, eugenics. I'm straight up doing eugenics at the moment in Fire Emblem, because Fire Emblem actually has a lot of people don't really talk about it, but Fire Emblem actually has those elements to it. They don't have aging, but what they do have is second generations and sometimes a third generation, depending on which Fire Emblem you played. Because I read into it more when I discovered that this is how people play in Lunatic and higher difficulties. Because how they work is, I won't tell you the process in which it happens, but you have two characters, you can make them marry, and then their child has stats and class availability based on its parents, and little like bonuses as well, so much in the way that they're considering doing with Master's Chalice. So what you end up doing, and in my, because I'm a power gamer, I end up making these optimal pairs of parents to make them pump out the babies I want for my future party.
Ooh.
And it's kind of like fucked up because it's good because they kind of
are you a part of the Third Reich that has their has all
I only want blonde children. Is that bad?
I'm reminded of I'm reminded of like one of the Final Fantasy games where you have to try and breed the golden chocobo, and it's kind of like trying to get the
yeah, but with people. And the crazy thing is, because they've written conversations between all the characters, there's a straight up romantic arc, no matter which like pairing you choose. Like, there's some people who just can't be paired with others. But for example, there's two people. There's a dude who looks like a woman and a really hot chick, and they have their full like somewhat touching like arc, romantic arc to them. So you have that. So I don't feel bad to a lot of them because they do ostensibly
fall in love. It's programmed into the game. It's no problem. Jeez.
Yeah, the characters are falling in love. It's part of the game, and the kid's going to be fucking rigged. So it's like, that's the kind of like thought I'm putting into Fire Emblem. So I'm happy to hear if Massive Chalice does it. And that's the kind of thing, because Valkyria Chronicles or Final Fantasy never really did that. Whereas I like hearing that Western games like Massive Chalice are starting to borrow from these more niche Japanese games like Fire Emblem and taking into those the account of like the extended tactics, long term, the strategy, if you will, like the long term game of pre-planning out your future units, like that kind of stuff is definitely an element of this, the tactics subgenre that needs to be further explored. It's kind of cool.
I would like to say they are perfecting it, not just borrowing it. Because we all know, that American-made games perfect things.
Of course, yeah.
It's never perfecting. It's always evolving, always moving on.
I don't know.
Trying the next thing.
Brad Muir may say it's perfecting. Mr. Muir. But yeah, like, and yeah, just to round out the Fire Emblem topic, just to go back to what I was saying. So Nintendo 3DS doesn't do multitasking. And that's my biggest issue with it at the moment. So, for example, you open the shop, the eShop, as it were, and then you want to open the game. You have to close the shop to open the game. And it works vice versa. So if I'm playing a game and I want to visit the shop mid-battle, because I tend to just close the game mid-battle and leave it aside, because obviously battles can take like 10 minutes and I don't know, I'm not always willing to finish it out, especially if it's easy.
It's a 3DS. It's handheld, right?
Yeah, it's a handheld, right? It's supposed to be those short, like, put it down whenever you want, pick it up whenever you want, that kind of experience. So you'd expect with that to be able to like hot swap between things, because maybe when I pick it up again, I don't want to be doing exactly the same thing I did when I put it down. But no, it can't multitask. And that's why I actually ended up choosing casual mode, even though it felt bad on the inside in my heart, because I knew that there'd be situations, and it's happened, that I wanted to stop playing Fire Emblem for a second and check the store, for example. Especially for like DLC. I want to check the store to check DLC for Fire Emblem. And at that stage, I didn't know that you can buy DLC in-game, which is how the Fire Emblem developers got around this problem. But yeah, you straight up, there's no multitasking. So that's why I went to casual mode. But I ended up playing casual mode like I do with hardcore mode, which is I reset the game every time someone dies. So whatever.
Like a full reset?
Yeah.
No. Okay.
Revert to stage, save at the start of the battle. So I restart the whole battle.
You are more drawn into the story and all the different nuances that come with it more than actually immersive gameplay.
I have the same problem with this as I do with XCOM and a couple of other strategy games, in that I'm the type of person who plays games whilst watching shit or like listening to a podcast, right? But in those cases, when I'm doing something else with my ears, I don't want to be playing story stuff. So what I end up doing is grinding or playing like optional side missions and stuff like that. And because I do that, my characters always end up ridiculously overpowered. So in both XCOM and Fire Emblem, and to some extent Valkyria Chronicles, but definitely less so because obviously it's on a TV, so I'm not doing it at the same time as watching something else. All the difficulty is gone. So yes, I have to be drawn by the actual story because the gameplay becomes trivialized because I'm so overpowered for where I am. It's a problem with how I play games, I guess. But yeah.
Well, then I guess I'm excited for what you think of when Banner Saga comes out in a couple months. Because I think that'll be the next evolution. When I played it at PAX, there was no like added speech. It seemed like all text.
That's fine.
So if it is a heavy text thing, which is A-okay,
yeah,
it'll be interesting to see how drawn you are to that.
Man, yeah, so, I've been waiting for that game to have a single player for it's happening this year, to my understanding.
It's on the spoke. It's around the corner.
Yeah.
What else have you been playing this week? Anything? Or?
Let me just make sure I'm not forgetting anything, because I don't think I've been playing. Oh, no, I've just been reading, and I plugged the book I read last week. So nothing else. So let's move on. to the news segment. And of course, the biggest news of the week by far is
Atlas. Persona 4 now.
Yeah, Atlas has opened a website, p-ch.jp/. And all it is a date and a time in Japan.
It's the worst URL ever created. No, don't have dashes.
Yeah, just bad. Just a bad URL. But like the only thing off this whole page that I'm excited by is at the bottom left hand corner, and I'm going to link it in the chat, even though no one will click on it, is a tiny little image, which is P Studio, which is the Persona Studio. All they do is Persona games and Catherine, which means this is confirmed to be from them. And whatever it is, I'm incredibly excited. This is literally
Half-Life 3, everyone is confirmed.
Like,
right here with
straight up, all the Valve stuff happened. Everything has been on this week. I've been at work and all this shit. This is the only thing that got me like truly excited this week.
And we'll be happy to talk about that come November 24th.
Yeah, November 24th. Anyway, moving on from that. People out there know that I know about Persona 5. Maybe happening. Anyway.
This feels a lot like they're building up sort of just what is it sort of thing in the same lines as Metal Gear Solid.
Yeah. Hype. I can, you know what? I would be surprised.
That weird trailer we saw for the Phantom Limb. It's like, what is this? I don't know what's going on.
So the page is like the date and the time, and has three square empty boxes at the top. And those boxes are used in the game to denote something that's about to be selected or about to be canceled. I don't know why they chose those, but there you go. I bet that November 24th, they're only going to reveal one of those boxes.
The last one is the image of the new Persona game, and it's going to be canceled.
Nice. No, I'm betting it's going to be like three main characters, and they're all going to be returning characters. That's my bet. But whatever, let's move on. Anyone who cares about this shit,
Cloud makes an introduction to Persona 4.
No, yeah, the third one is actually it's Cloud, but like he's fighting someone from Persona 4.
Dude, I'd play that game.
There you go.
The Persona guys would do better writing than Squaresoft for Cloud. So, all right, Steam.
In real news.
Do you guys want to do the not Steam news first or the Steam news now? Because this is the Diablo thing.
Let's get the elephant in the room. Let's talk about Valve. Are they making a stake in the console wars? I mean, like, they sort of are, but...
Okay, let's start from the top.
I will argue console vehemently.
Let's do this in a structured format. We're going to be talking about...
Explain to me the basics.
Yeah.
The basics, and then we'll just talk about... Because I really just want to know, who do we think they're targeting with this?
Okay. All right. So the first thing is, well, it actually has a question to be posed for it as a whole, I guess. But I do want to, these topics are worth discussion in single. So I'm overruling that. We'll start with SteamOS. We'll start with SteamOS. Anyone wants to explain what SteamOS is to the layman, to anyone out there who hasn't heard this announcement? Which is probably
not. All right. It's there's a third operating system called Linux that's open source. There's a lot of variants from it, like Ubuntu and whatnot, that take different builds of development, since it's a constantly evolving process, and try and refine it.
Yep.
Steam will be a free one that basically you can get, and it runs your stuff on your computer.
Yeah. So it plugs into a normal PC. It supports normal PC hardware. The main thing is it's based on Ubuntu, so it'll be solid. And people have looked at into some, like, I think the Steam URL or backend stuff, and found out that it's essentially Ubuntu with Big Picture slapped on top of it. So it just looks like an evolution of Big Picture, but as a OS for a HTPC or fully fledged home PC. But they'll obviously add like music and TV and movies and home streaming as well to that. So what are you guys' thoughts on Steam? Is anyone actually interested in fucking SteamOS? Because I'm not, and I feel crazy for not being. Okay.
Yes.
I am. As a Squiddle, why are you interested in it, first off?
For me, I like the idea of, I mean, for years, I thought the idea of an HTPC was kind of bullshit. I mean, you don't need... I guess for me, it's always been, I can stream content to my Apple TV and then watch it. I don't need a massive computer that's sitting there, or even a Raspberry Pi, if you want, that's going to stream videos that I have that is on my computer and over my network, which is fine, but I can't play games on it.
Right.
And that's my big thing, is that I can do that. I can watch movies and I'm all happy. Like, yay, watch movies. But the ability to use my behemoth of a machine if I wanted to do all the graphics processing for a game and then stream it to a tiny little box, mm-hmm. a box, let's just say, off of my, you know, my Steam games that I have is awesome. Like if I could have had Dust and Elysian Tail playing on that, I would have been sitting in front of my TV and beaten it months ago,
man,
when I got it. Because yeah. for me, it was always, I come home from work and I'm sitting in front of my TV. I really don't want to go into my computer and play it. If it was there, I could just pick up my controller and say play, and it would do all the pre-processing on my computer side.
Yeah.
And
all the wizardly stuff, magical shit.
That's right. It would go on the Steam box essentially, and I love that idea. I really do.
So essentially, we're hopping on to one of the biggest features of SteamOS here, which is the remote play. Essentially, let's just call it what it is. It's a remote play, but for PCs, it's the ability to stream from your. I know Nvidia has been playing around with this a lot. I'm not sure how far ATI has gotten into this specific part, but essentially, video cards for a long time have had built-in H.264 encoders and decoders, as looks to just be utilizing that to be able to send your images pumped out of your PC to your TV in the living room. Like that's kind of what we're talking about here, right?
Right. Which is why I argue that it's a console. I argue that fact because you are still, in some cases, using a PC Master Gaming Race computer to basically run your games, but you have a little box that just streams it onto your television.
So that's interesting because you're approaching it from the slim client point of view, which like Apple TV, Vita TV, those are called slim clients because they're small with a very small OS, and the main function is to stream from something else. So you're approaching from a slim client perspective. Thurbleton, like, are you interested in playing Steam OS?
I am the opposite.
There we go.
I'm interested in this as a person who, whenever I, you know, like my PC gets old, I make a new one. I build from scratch.
Exactly.
Being able to take $150 off there because I want to feel legit and get a legit OS and not some hacked one is nice. I can just cut that cost off and then use Steam OS if it's good. I've tried Ubuntu and a couple versions of it in the past few years. Right. But I just didn't feel comfortable with it. And
wait, so
this might be nice.
Do you, like, for example, a lot of people have moved on to, like, very light laptop OSs and straight up thin clients for their full size desktop OS.
This would be for the desktop.
Yeah. But the reason they're doing that is because they can do things like word processing, Excel processing, et cetera, on just straight up their browser through like Google like stuff, for example. Or I think Microsoft has an alternative for in browser like word processing as well. Is that part of the reason you'd find this an adequate solution? Because for me, I need my full size Excel. I can't use the browser stuff. Like, would a SteamOS machine do what you needed it to do?
It partially is, and this is like something that is this is my gaming rig as well as I guess for podcasting editing purposes. But
yeah,
I have three other computers, I guess four. Yeah. I have an old computer that was the previous tenant that I haven't really messed with because I'm not sure if he's going to come back and get it.
Right.
It's been a couple of years. But I have two laptops, one of which is I'm using as a home theater thing, and I could put the Steam OS on that and have it for transporting. I have the old rig before this one, which I could use for like a server or something, and I have a laptop that I use for programming, and then, like that runs Windows.
Okay.
That I could have the Excel on. Use that for all the Windows stuff.
So essentially, your work PC is a Windows laptop, and everything else is you can just play around with. Okay.
Mm-hmm. For work stuff, like programming, I'd rather not be around a bunch of video games. So it's intentionally designed to not be that powerful and be used for different purposes.
Okay. Well, that's the case then. If your PC is a dedicated gaming device, or maybe some web surfing as well, I assume. Then I can see SteamOS being everything you need. Like I can definitely see that working because obviously, I bet Google will put Chrome on there. Like you'll have a browser because I will.
Well, I'm interested. I think Google might be putting out an OS in the future, which that might be worth looking into. It depends on if they go more corporate try and keep their.
Do you mean Chrome OS?
Yeah, I think it does, but I don't. It's not. it's not in a place that it'd be workable.
Yeah, it's not no, it's yeah. not solidified enough.
No.
One big worry is already with the Steam library. Mm-hmm. When I try clicking on stuff, I will sometimes click big picture, and I have to quickly close it.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, geez, why'd they put it next to settings?
And but that's my big problem with it. Like,
I've never had that issue. It's built.
No, but make it so the Steam OS, like, that if you can have it designed and editable with the display and the UI to be a desktop rig, if you want, I'll be on board with that.
They'd be crazy if they didn't, because, like, to my understanding, this is going to be big box OS put on your TV through a thin client or fully fledged HTPC. But this is Valve. They're not crazy, and they've already said that they'll be open to user feedback. So it'll be almost 100% certain that alternatively, it'll just look like Ubuntu with Steam running in the taskbar. Like, that's...
I'm actually interested to see how, if I were to load this on our servers at work using VMware and then have a VPN client to my PC to stream it to my television, how much I could pump out in graphics processing with 36 gigs of RAM and solid state VMware hard drives in the back end. So, man.
But yeah, like, so it's this is kind of like running the gamut, because I'm a person who, like, my TV is already hooked up to my PC, but my TV is on my desk, so it's not going to go anywhere either way. So the whole idea of a Steam OS seems entirely useless to me, because I want to be able to alt-tab between a game and anything else that I would be doing at the time. And that could include, like, iTunes, for example. I don't think you'll ever have iTunes running on a Steam OS machine. I'm not even sure if iTunes supports Linux at the moment. They might, but I'm not sure.
Well, then you would just run, like, VirtualBox or something like that. They could run
I'd be surprised,
because Apple's running on Steam
Or
OS.
Just, like, there's hacks that replace iTunes for Apple hardware. Like, there's other programs that can replace iTunes, but none of them are as usable for me that I've used. Like, even, like, I think there's a plugin for Foobar that allows it to interface with your iPhone, and I still would prefer iTunes, just because I'm comfortable with that interface. I like using the store, for example, because I buy things and not pirate everything. So, like, that kind of stuff is stuff I'd want, and you wouldn't be able to use that. Like, Thurbleton, that's all you're saying, that essentially, if they could show you that this OS will support a large amount of games and at the same time possibly run some of them even better, that's enough for you to go, yeah, I'm going to get that.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's definitely that's going to be a challenge for them, is because, like, only 200 of the 2,000 games run on Linux right now. But,
exactly.
I think they got a lot of time. They've been working on this for a while. They hopefully will find a way to do something as good as, like, DirectX or something for making stuff run on Windows versus run on Linux.
And that is the elephant in the room in this part of the discussion, because, like, Squiddle, for example, you couldn't necessarily have a fully fledged HTPC running just SteamOS and be able to run all your games. How do you feel about that? Like, you're perfectly fine using a Slim client, I assume, for most of your gaming purposes, but Slim client couldn't play the Steam games. So it's kind of a weird gray area there, right? Well,
okay, so you're saying, so if I wanted to play Half-Life 2...
Yeah, you could only play it via the streaming. And as we know, streaming does have latency issues, even with the Vita TV.
Hold on. So you say that. I mean, but we're talking... We what was the game company? Was it PlayOn? Or not PlayOn. What was it?
OnLive?
OnLive.
Yeah.
So you had OnLive that... When I did that, there was a little bit of leniency. But imagine, I mean, I was playing from a server, Lord knows who where, and I got a little bit of lag, and I was acceptable of it. But if you're playing on your internal network, if you have a gig switch sitting on your desk from your computer to your device in your other room, you are not going to have the leniency that you had with that. So I don't really honestly feel that you're going to have much leniency, because the only thing you're transmitting is exactly what's being produced on your computer. It's right. Almost like having a GIF playing, and you're reacting to it as it's playing. So I don't – until I see it, I don't really – it is up for speculation, mm-hmm. but I don't feel that there's going to be as much leniency as people really think with that idea. Considering that it's in a LAN network. It's inside of your network.
So the company that did that as well as on live was obviously Gaikai, and they're owned by Sony. So I feel comfortable in saying that the Vita TV and the Vita Remote Play would be probably the gold standard for within home, this stuff, like streaming stuff within your home. And those you're looking at about a 50 or around their MS response time there and back again for gameplay. And that's makes most games perfect playable. It translates to like a couple of frames, maybe five or less frames of lag. And in a 60 FPS game, that is almost unnoticeable, especially for like shooters and driving games where like absolute precision is not required. But if you're playing Super Meat Boy, for example, Squirtle, I don't think it'll be good enough. And that's
right. Well, I've never played Super Meat Boy. My confession right now, I've never played that game, so I can't have a say on that. But
right. But either way, let's move on to the second part of the Steam discussion, because I think we've covered most of the stuff there. Just to round it out, everyone pretty positive. I'm highly skeptical. Thurbleton, do you think that a lot of people will try Steam MS, or do you think it'll be a very niche kind of product?
They had my attention. Now they have my interest.
Okay.
And I think a lot of people are like, because the announcement is one thing. Let's see if they can walk the walk. Let's see what happens with these coming weeks of them actually releasing hard data.
Right.
When we get responses from people who actually have the hardware, we can actually see what the times are going to be like, because OnLive is sort of on its way out the door, but we have stuff like the SteamOS that we've been talking about. We have stuff like Gaikai.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting, and we have. I'm not sure if the other countries that people are listening in, I know Australia is working on improving it, but America doesn't really have the best infrastructure, shall we say.
Exactly.
For the internet, for the this growing thing. So it's the coming years are going to be a crazy trip. So
it's good. It's going to be
keep your eyes open.
For example, like Squiddle, how many people do you think, because obviously when SteamOS is released to the public in 2014 or so, it's going to be plastered all over Steam. Like Valve has a significant weight in the PC gaming community to be able to like push what they want to push into people's eyes and make them aware of it. Do you think a lot of people who are just casually on Steam will try out SteamOS?
Well, I mean, yes. And the only reason I say that they will try it is because a lot of people, I think, that are PC gamers, and I don't mean this is any disrespect to console gamers at all, but they are more of a, hey, let's try this. Let's get our laptops out and do a dual boot.
Oh, yeah.
Let's dual boot totally our PC just to try it. I mean,
they're more hands-on.
People who don't own consoles or people who own consoles aren't going to be like that. They're going to be like, I'm playing my console, you know? Yeah. But I feel if you are a hardcore PC gamer and Steam is your go-to for everything, then you're gonna try it out. Like I tried Big Picture at first, even on my PC. I was like, it's okay, but it wasn't great.
Yeah.
So I never really went back to it. If they can actually perfect this to a way that where I can play it on my, you know, my TV in my other room, then yeah, I mean, I'll do it. I'll give it a shot, definitely. But that's just kind of the tinkerer in me, and I like tinkering with things. So I think a lot of people will try it. And, you know, I want to say that Valve is not going to be half-assed when it comes to it, and they're going to do a really good job putting it out. But I would like to think that about a lot of companies that I back and support. So we'll see when it comes out. But I do think a lot of people will at least try it. And, you know, for me, I will definitely be the guy that tries to break it. I'm going to load it on VMware Fusion. I'm going to load it in VMware. I'm going to try to see if I can get it so it doesn't work, or that it works in a way it's not supposed to.
Right.
So that's just my take on it.
Cool. And then finally, before I just remember this before we move on. Has anyone here tried Big Picture? So Squiddle, you've actually tried Big Picture. What were your problems with it? Because for me, it just felt too slow. Like, I straight up felt too slow, and it felt like I still need to take out my keyboard and mouse for half the stuff I wanted to do.
Yeah, when I used it, my issue, there were two issues. One, I couldn't figure out how to get out of Big Picture. And this was like right when it came out. So they may have made some big changes at this point to how to get out of Big Picture. But the other one was that, it crashed when I was playing games. And I know they've done a lot of things to curb that and make it better. But I have not gone back since because I don't play my games on a big television. I have I have a 27-inch IPS monitor where I play games, so I don't need it on a television set if I'm going to be here playing.
Right.
But the comfort level of being able to play it on a television set is intriguing to me. So without having to have or build a HTPC, you know, if I can have a box that I pay $100 or $150 for that I can throw in the other room and say, just stream shit, stream it all, done. All right, I'm good with that. I will give it a shot, definitely.
Man, so you pretty much Swindle is up for anything that'll get his games onto his
PC. If only there was a good controller you could use to.
I know, right?
Almost there. Almost there.
All controllers suck that I know of right now.
So we'll just touch on it shortly. Because we have pretty much discussed a lot to do with it. The second announcement was, of course, the Steam Machines, which is Valve partnering with a bunch of different companies to put out boxes of various sizes and capabilities to run SteamOS in your living room. Is anyone here interested in Steam Machines?
Like the one thing I will say about it, because we've only heard more or less one, and that was back during CES.
Yeah,
was just like the model they had. I can't remember the company name, but
little cube thing.
Yeah, it was a little cube thing, and it still seemed very modular, still seemed very PC.
Yeah.
It was a small box designed for living room style, but you could, buy through one proprietor, buy these different ways to change out the motherboard, change out the video card and all that.
Yeah. It's interesting because I think there's only one case that I can think of where this approach worked well, and that's Android. In, for example, Windows Phone's case, and I believe a couple of different companies have tried this before where they just put out an OS and work with hardware partners to put it out. In most cases, it doesn't work very well because the core conceit is it marketable? Can you actually get people to fucking buy it? And it's really hard to do when you have a billion different products which are kind of competing with each other in addition to everything else that's out there. For example, this is two of these companies release a slim client. Which would you buy? Which is the one that would Valve would push, for example, if they would push any? Which will be on TV?
I just want to correct you right now. It's been bothering me. And it's called it's a thin client.
A thin client, not a slim client?
Thin client is the actual technical term for it.
So it's not a slim client, it's a thin client.
No, not a slim. Yeah. It's a thin client. And just to let you know, a zero client would be one that taps in directly with
are you PC. On wiki
there
right
would
now
be, there would be no OS except for a very small kernel running on it.
Are you wiki right just, now is this wiki?
No I know this for a fact.
Oh cool, you should hear from me earlier. Okay, so thin client.
I wanted to just kind of let it play out, but it's bugging me. It was like hitting me little by little.
People you know what, people at home would probably be mad at me as well. So a thin client. So two companies do release thin clients. You have two which are competing with each other. Which would be pushed more on TV? Which would people actually buy? And you have that entire problem with the entire range of products behind the Steam Machine moniker. And that's a problem because the only real way, like that's how iOS, well, one of the reasons why Apple works successful, including many others, they have one phone every year that they push. It's the newest, biggest, greatest. You know which one to buy. That one's the best. You just get that off the shelf. They build shitloads of that one unit, so they have plenty to put into the market. But when you have something like Android, in terms of Android, you have a couple of companies doing really well, like Samsung, who've created a name for themselves with the Galaxy series, and HTC to a lesser extent with the One series. But everyone else is kind of, some people buy them, most people don't. It depends on the price point. You never really know what does your phone company offer. What are they pushing, for example? Like, there's many other ways to get them to people's hands, and none of them are as effective as, for example, Apple, who just has that one big badass device. And so I think that'll be a problem with this in general. So I can't wait to see how it plays out. And to be honest, I'm again quite skeptical as to whether this will be successful at all. I think there's a bigger market in people like, for example, Thurbleton, who are willing to like just dedicate one PC that they already own to SteamOS and just have that run it and see how that goes. Or people who
this seems like a multi-purpose, like the SteamOS thing seems multi-purpose.
Yeah.
I definitely think it's, if Valve thinks it's something that needs focused.
Yeah.
They certainly have the budget to keep investing in it.
Yeah.
Like, big picture didn't catch on, so they're going to keep throwing stuff at it, keep throwing money at it until it sticks.
Exactly. And they have the development power to put, at least on the software side of things. It's just that when they start touching into hardware, like I would not be surprised if Valve have like straight up released their own Steam box, whether it's a thin client or a fully fledged HTPC. I don't know, but I wouldn't be surprised either way. Any guesses on your parts? Well, do you think they will?
I either way, I don't think so, only because they don't seem like, even the next announcement, the console seems like a big stuff, because they just do software. It seems weird for them to do hardware.
Exactly.
But something I remember when reading up interviews of people who got to talk to Valve employees is they only do stuff if like they get enough community, like of employee backing on something. There's no real boss structure there.
Yeah.
So for them to invest this much in it means there's a lot of people there who feel passionately that this is something that used to be a thing.
It's creating a new market in a really interesting way, because I don't know if there's people outside of the hardcore PC gaming community who sit there and are wondering or want something that isn't already existing to game on, because I think a lot of people out there are already sold on the console experience or the PC experience, and it's going to be fascinating to see if there's a market for this kind of third middle kind of step. But speaking of Valve straying into hardware, we've gotten to the one really exciting announcement to me this week, because I actually saw the other ones coming. I saw this one coming as well, but I didn't see the form factor coming. Hey guys, what do you think of that Steam controller?
I think it's amazing I think it's great that we've seen stuff from like Hitbox and whatnot, but really like Microsoft, like in Sony, haven't really done any big innovations.
Yep.
Hey, that bumper is even more bumpy. Like,
yeah.
Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
But like Nintendo's been the main people throwing stuff at the wall when it comes to innovating controllers. And they, like with the Wii U, isn't like, that's cool, but it's not really innovating the controller. It's just adding another monitor. So
would you call this controller like the Oculus Rift in forms of like new stuff, like something that's like way out there, but.
No, because they still got the idea of using your thumbs and whatnot toggle. I don't know what that thing is called officially.
Which part?
Like the part where you move your thumbs in a controller.
Oh, the thumbsticks? Or this not having thumbsticks?
The thumbsticks. The idea of not having thumbsticks and having a full touchpad.
Slip pads, yeah.
Slip pads.
Because they're
calling them something crazy.
No analog sticks to be found, just straight up. These pads, the trackpads. I think they're just calling them straight up trackpads. They're not really calling them.
When I saw it, I was like, wait, this is the controller? I was very taken back when I first saw it. I was like, how does this work? Do I just like push in on the pads to move it forward, back? I don't know. It took my breath away, to
be
honest.
That was your first
really
reaction?
Nice looking. Yeah, okay. This was really nice looking. Okay, how does it work? And then when I saw, okay, it has like a little LCD screen. And it's got buttons, and then... Okay, all right, I'm kind of getting into it. I can see how this could be something, but it'll be different, but I think it will be something fun and new. And I like, and it's going to be bad, I like that the PC gaming race now has its own controller.
Hmm.
And in a weird way, it is something that we can say that's our controller. You know, Xbox, Microsoft, Sony have always said, this is our controllers. Even the Wii, this is our controller. Now the PC, instead of having Mad Cats make a bullshit fucked up controller for PCs for years,
or to say, use this the Xbox is our PC controller. That's sure. been a staple for years.
Sure. But I'm saying, you know, like that was always, that's still Microsoft, right?
Yeah.
And really the PC only had Mad Cats or whoever else to make a controller for. This is going to be kind of like, this is our controller. And I like that aspect of it.
That's an interesting perspective. What were your first thoughts when you saw the Steam controller?
It was definitely like, okay, like, because the third announcement is I was leaning towards it's probably going to be a controller just to go in line with the other two announcements.
Right.
Maybe an OS, like maybe a Source 2.0 might be thinking like, okay, like, oh, we've announced an OS, we've announced a machine. Here's a way to make games as well, like a Unity sort of thing.
That would have been huge if that would happen.
That would have been cool. Yeah. And then like, then the people would have really been hyped for Half-Life 3. But
yeah.
No.
But no, that wasn't to be thrilled.
Yeah, wasn't it? But it, yeah, it's something that I thought was like, okay, it's a controller, whatever. But the main thing that was interesting about it was the thumb things.
Of course, yes. That's the, so my first reaction to this controller was, holy shit, that is one of the ugliest pieces of tech I've ever seen. Like,
I don't know. I've seen some ugly pieces of tech.
Oh, well, I thought it was speakers
at one point.
It seemed very Linux to me.
Yes, yes, it did. Like we're gonna say fuck what everyone else has done. We're doing our own shit, and that was very Linux.
It's okay. So I was as soon as I saw it, I was immediately skeptical, because when I thought of what Valve would do for a controller in the Steam space, especially with the big picture mode, and especially with more and more games adopting Xbox 360 controls as a staple standard, I was expecting straight up Valve, because they're using the monikers, they're using ABXY, like just straight up, like Nintendo and Microsoft do. Like I was just expecting a fucking normal fucking controller from them. And when I heard the Steam controller was announced, I was like, whatever. And then I clicked through to it, and when I saw it, yes, first I thought it was the ugliest thing I've seen in a long time, because I was expecting something that was sexy, that looked like a PS4, DualShock 4 kind of controller, but like more, like something like a hybrid between that and the Xbox One controller. It was what I was expecting. So that was the first hurdle I had to get, especially as a person who is a self-confessed console gamer along with a cynic. it was something to get used to see this and go, okay, maybe that's something I'd actually want to use. And the only reason I got over that step was when I started reading into it. Like, so to break down the controller, it actually has buttons on the back as well. So if people who are wondering why the fuck there isn't any face buttons, you have your couple of face buttons. You have the big ones down the bottom. I'm actually looking at a big blown up picture of it right now. So you have the big ones around bottom. You have ABXY, which surround the central touchpad. And you have actually two buttons, I think, on either side on the back. So you have buttons for your middle fingers to be playing with along with your thumbs, which is
I'm curious. Like, they definitely put it just like it's a four finger primary thing. Yeah. You know, you're like your index fingers, maybe your middle fingers, and then your thumbs.
Yeah.
I'm curious what, like, how that interaction with the pinky and the ring finger is going to play underneath the controller, because we've, like, from people who have used Vitas, they don't like.
Yeah,
Jeff Gerstmann said, like, he doesn't like the backside of the Vita, because he puts his hand somewhere and it says something.
Yeah, well,
so
the problem
are they going to be buttons, or are they going to be like, how's the feel going to be on that?
It's a really good question, because I think they've addressed that problem with this one. Well, firstly, let's just finish off this topic. The buttons on the back. The main issue for me, as a person who's familiar with consoles and how they do controllers for a long time. By the way, there's like a huge amount of sound coming from the wall next to me at the moment. I'll have to edit out in post. Hopefully you guys at home don't hear.
So that's what that was.
Yeah, just a gigantic, like, freaking, it's water.
I thought there was like a rock ballad going on in the background.
Like, what the fuck is happening? But yeah, so essentially, your pinky and your palms themselves will be what supports the majority of the weight of this controller. Because I think that your ring fingers and your middle fingers will be the ones that hit the bottom two buttons. But this does still have shoulder buttons. So you have your... So put your hands in front of you. You have your pointing fingers on the shoulder buttons. You have your ring finger on the lower buttons. You have your middle finger on the higher buttons on the back. Then you have your palms wrapping around the controller. And then finally, you have your thumbs on the trackpads. So almost all your hand is being used. It's going to be very interesting to see how people like adapt to that, if they adapt to it. But the main thing is that this has, that the Vita doesn't have, is that it's not a touch surface in the back. It's just straight up buttons. And I think people are capable of doing that. The main problem with the Vita is you end up accidentally pressing the back touchpad and setting things off that you didn't want to, because you're just brushing past it. And it's capacitive touch, which is now in retrospect a terrible fucking idea.
Well, then the other thing I thought was nice with the announcement was that, like, they're not using a rumble feature. They're using haptics. I just thought it was great, like, the way they displayed it of, look, we're the PC master race, you guys. We don't really need some, like, thing spinning, like a weight spinning on a gyro
to
make it immersive. we're going to do something cooler with this thing. Yeah,
Steam Controller is built around a new generation of super precise haptic feedback employing dual linear resonant actuators.
Yep.
These small, strong weighted electromagnets are attached to each of the dual trackpads. They are capable of delivering a wide range of force and vibration, allowing precise control over frequency, amplitude, and direction of movements, i.e., they're slightly different rumbles attached to your pads.
I just want
to
say that resistance is futile.
Nice. Nice. Okay, let me just fucking Google this. Where was that? Dual linear resonant actuators. I'm going to Google it and see what comes up. But while I do that, Thurbleton, do you want to explain to me why they're not having... What is replacing analog sticks on this controller? What are they?
The buttons? The thing we've been talking about with the dual trackpads. I mean, like,
yeah, the dual trackpads,
speaker looking things.
That, dual trackpads.
They they're things you put your thumbs on, and it's I guess light pressure based of just where you're like. I don't know, and that's the thing that has me interested.
And that's the crazy part, right? Because and I'm happy that you weren't able to fully explain it because it. All they can really do, all they can really
well,
tell
thank
us.
Thank you for setting me up to fail.
Yeah. Damn. You could have had a better effort. I don't know. I want to see how you go.
I don't know what.
So they're essentially they make it sound like they took laptop trackpads, circularized them, and put them on either side because the words they're using to describe them are a surface which emulates a tactile resistance. But it also has you have these crazy like highly adaptive rumble functions attached directly to them, so they'll be able to give you a weird feedback sensation. So there's actually videos online of these like things that just look like iPads, just straight up tablets, but they have similar actuators in them. Whereas the app that people use to demonstrate it is you unlock the iPad or whatever it is that whatever they're called, the Android tablet, and there's four surfaces. Just like it looks like ground textures. So imagine a ground texture from a video game. One brick ground texture, a wall texture, one grass texture, and so on and so forth. So there's four textures there. And if you actually rub your finger against it, the tactile or what do they call it? The haptic feedback is so precise that you actually get a feeling similar to what you would feel if you actually rubbed your fingers against the real thing. Now, you wouldn't obviously have like as much resistance on a glass surface as you would on brick, but you do get like that bumpy kind of feeling. And it sounds like they're using these new generation of like haptic feedback things on these trackpads. So I believe you'll get a haptic feedback when you actually tap them to enter an input, but also haptic feedback as you drag over them to give you a feeling that you're actually putting in an input. How do you guys feel about that? Like, does that sound like an interesting touch surface to you? Because to me, it sounds interesting but different. I don't know if it would actually be good.
If it's well executed, I mean, of course, it's going to be, you know, if it's executed in the fashion that they talk about, it's going to be really awesome.
I like how Squiddle's really positive about this.
Well, no, but I make that statement based off of, you know, even Microsoft, when they came out, you know, or when they talked about, you know, their controller for the first time.
They did,
the first
yeah.
Xbox, you know, like this is going to have immersive gameplay. You're going to feel like you're in the game. And I've heard so many companies saying that I'm going to feel like I'm in the game when I'm playing it. But I don't actually feel any different besides a vibrating control in my hand. Whoop-de-fucking-do. You know, I really hope that they execute well. So, like I said, if they execute it based on what they're saying – then yes, it will do well. But if they cut corners in any form or fashion to where it doesn't feel immersive when I'm playing it, or if I hit that switch, or if I have, you know, someone basically hit me from one side and my finger comes off of the button, you know, for whatever reason, because I can't go that way anymore. And the only way I can kind of talk about it is if you've ever driven a 94 Corvette back in the day, and this is crazy, I know.
Yeah, what?
But the thing they had before there was like, you know, safety features like you're going too fast, we're going to basically pull the power from this wheel, they kicked your foot off the accelerator. It was like a thud. Boom, your foot would come right off.
That's kind of cool.
Disengage.
Wow.
And so if they could implement something like that in the controller to where if I got hit from one side, I'm hitting a wall, essentially. I can't go that way. Oh, they hit my thumb off. But
if you can get that, but on a controller for your fingers, right. You're saying you'd be...
That sounds kind of cool. That's kind of like, oh, man, they've really, like, they've done it. They've gotten to the point where, you know, okay, I get it. They've gone that far in the technology to where they can do that. And that would be awesome, but we'll see. That's where I feel.
I like how you're on the interested side because I'm on the skeptical side of this thing. Well, even though,
self-confessed cynic. I mean,
because I look at this and go, okay, so they actually use two trackpads. They're using two trackpads in circular format to emulate an input for the right and left hand side. And we'll talk about the replacement, the fact that this is trying to replace mouse and keyboard in a second. But before we get there. So essentially, you're using two high sensitivity touch surfaces, which they say are equivalent to the resolution of a monitor. So really high. So you're looking at like an Apple trackpad level of precision here in terms of your touch on those displays. Now, will that translate? It all comes down to how games map it because you're missing analog sticks on this whole thing. Some people are going crazy and saying, "Oh, this is awesome because they can be both analog sticks." And like our face buttons, they can be both in the same thing. And I don't think that's an intelligent design from a mapping perspective because that could be confusing. If you do, like, at what point do you differentiate between a light turn from a tap in that direction? Like, there's a lot of elements that could instigate crosstalk, which is the worst thing in games. You never want to be jumping in Super Meat Boy and accidentally move to the right instead because they're on the same button. Like, you don't want that. So it's all going to come down to if those are going to be used for analog movement. And it looks like they will be. But if they are, how does that translate to them also being used as buttons because they're clickable? And it's just going to be interesting because, for example, if you think of the PlayStation PSP Go, had replaced dual analog sticks or analog sticks in general with a touch surface on the bottom. And people have forgotten about that because no one bought it. I think it was a piece of shit. But essentially, those worked pretty well. Like, it didn't give you the full... It didn't feel like a full analog stick, but because they were small as well. So these are actually bigger than an analog stick would be, even if you extend it to its outer reaches. So it's actually a really big, by looks of it, touch surface. So it's... I don't know, but it could be really cool. Thurbleton, any final thoughts about the trackpads? I think they're an interesting idea, but it really comes down to the mapping. How about you?
Well, so here's the thing. This is Valve, mm-hmm. and like I said before, this seems very, like, when I saw it, it seemed Linux to me.
Yeah.
So what I'm sort of predicting is that, like, let's say when you log into your Steam ID on, you know, the OS and all that, it brings up the profile for that controller and its sensitivity that you have set to like a mouse.
Yeah.
And so when I see the bumps in the trackpad like cover, I see that as like the further out you get, the further the acceleration with the movement.
That could be interesting.
Like, you can play with that sort of thing.
Yeah.
That could be cool. I see that I think it'll be an interesting way to play with the analog design of stuff. It's analog and digital, but I think if you can sort of scale that some or play around with the settings of it, that could prove to be kind of interesting.
How do you guys think of the right-hand side of it? Like the fact that it doesn't have normal traditional face buttons, and instead they move those face buttons to the center. Like, one criticism people have had for this is instead of having one thumb off the analog sticks, now you potentially need both your thumbs off the analog sticks to be inputting things for games. What do you guys think of that?
Because I thought that was interesting. It definitely changes some of the things. Like, with a traditional PC game with the mouse and keyboard, like, I can be like looking, turn to the right while running in one direction and like, you know, throwing grenades or opening a door or something.
Exactly. Yeah.
With just having your two thumbs, maybe your index fingers, if you can move them to like that Y and B on the top corners of the
that would be the worst. Just assume no.
Well, no, I mean, like, it's that seems like something you could do while moving. You like bring it up and push that button.
Yeah.
It definitely limits what you can do when it comes to fluidity of games.
Yeah. It's going to be, oh man, it's going to be really interesting.
I would just like to make a one mention. You know, back in the day, you know, people hated trackpads, right?
Yeah.
I mean, on any laptop, trackpads were absolutely volatile, horrible. They didn't work well. It was kind of like, if you had one, we're going to use a mouse. And then even PC said, we're going to give you a button to disable it.
Yeah.
After a while.
Or just, IBM thing, not IBM. Yeah, ThinkPads, which just went, fuck the trackpad. We're going to have this little dot in the middle of the keyboard that is just straight up a joystick for your PC.
Like, yeah, I mean, everybody loves the little nipple in the keyboard. But, you know, and I would like to just mention, and I know I'm going to be, you know, flamed for being an Apple fanboy at this point, but it wasn't until Apple released their, you know, their trackpads and their newer Mac Pros.
Yeah.
Yeah. And even their magic pad, trick pad, whatever, it's a fucking horrible name.
The mouse is stupid. Don't bring up the mouse.
Yeah, the mouse. I'm talking about the pad. I use that at work, and it has been the most phenomenal trackpad. I've replaced it completely for the last 2 years at my work. And so if they can do what Apple did for the trackpad to a gaming controller, I'm just saying there is definitely room for improvement. Exactly.
Yeah.
That's why I have a high outlook. I feel really, really, really good about it. And because, you know, Gabe is sitting right here behind me with a knife to my throat and he wants me to say all these good things about it. So,
my only response to that is it all comes down to whether I can play Rogue Legacy well on this. Like, for example, can this replace face buttons, or will those face buttons as they're currently placed on it be sufficient in their placement? But the argument with this, and this ties into the last feature of this controller, which we haven't talked about yet, is this controller is made to play those games, but it's actually also and perhaps mainly geared towards other games, specifically Euro Truck Simulator 2 and other PC games in the Valve.
I feel like they put that like link there in the official comment for like all of Germany.
I don't know.
Those guys be loving Euro Truck Simulator.
Oh my god, I have no idea how that became like a meme, but it did, and I'm happy about it. Yeah, so like it's essentially made to be able to do things like, let's see, what they list off. Whole genres of games that were previously only playable with a keyboard and mouse are now accessible from the sofa. RTS games, casual, cursor-driven games, strategy games, 4X space exploration games, and a huge variety of indie games and simulation titles.
I'm still skeptical about strategy. Like, I want to – I'm gonna wait and see for that because like strategy games, they've tried and tried to get them on a console – and on a controller, and it's been a big challenge just trying to get that iteration of moving around the battlefield, being able to tactically like select whole units, move them in certain areas on the fly.
Yeah.
So, and I'm interested with, you know,
it's really they have crazy my attention because the reason they believe they can do that is not only do you have two trackpads. I don't know how that's going to. Like, is one going to be the mouse, or are they both going to be like extensions of the same mouse control? Like, that's going to be interesting. But the primary argument on their part to how this is able to do that is the touchscreen in the middle of the controller. And this touchscreen actually works differently to other touchscreens in that it is not capacitive, or if it is capacitive, they're not using it in that function. Because how it works instead is when you have your thumb on the touchscreen, all it's sending to the thin client or whatever the SteamOS thing it's hooked up to, or just Steam on Windows, because it'll work with Windows as well, is the position of your thumb on that surface. It's not actually sending an input. It's sending the position of your thumb. It's also displaying on it potential options, maybe up to 4 options is an example they use. But a straight up display, it's a small LCD display that'll have a full capability of displaying whatever the developer wants it to. Now, your thumb is on it. it is hover, it's on that display, but you don't actually want to be looking down and looking at this tiny ass display. You want to be looking or keeping your attention on your TV, which is a problem which people have cited with, for example, the Wii U. They don't want to be continually looking up and down between two entirely different displays, in some cases with different aspect ratios, and in this case, definitely so, and having to make that juggling act. So what this is doing instead is once you put your thumb on there and click it down, it actually brings that display as an overlay onto your screen. So you have your thumb on it, and it's giving you a live indication of where your thumb is on that screen display thing in the middle, but on your actual TV or monitor. So you can actually only look at the monitor without ever having to look down and scroll through menus and select an item by clicking again on that item. So, for example, in an RTS game, you can have options, let's say they put out buttons instead of to map to hotkeys. So in StarCraft, for example, you'd have pylon. You scroll to pylon without even looking down and click pylon to build a pylon, then scroll over to where you want to put it and click again to put it down. How does that sound as a potential, as an interesting new, it's definitely a new control input method. Squiddle?
Oh, sorry, chewing.
I knew someone was eating.
How dare you? After an hour and 44 minutes, geez, sir.
Yeah.
I think it's like for the StarCraft scenario, as soon as you like push a button, like put pressure on that that screen on the controller, it's going to go to the build option thing on the bottom right. So like build pylon or whatnot. I can definitely see that like with the trackpads and the... I forget what they're calling it. The screen in the middle, touchscreen.
Touchscreen.
I think those are like the combined going to Voltron together to make a good recreation of like what a mouse is supposed to do mechanically on a computer.
That could be really interesting. If it does, do you think it will just like move the cursor to that position, or do you think it will actually give you a whole like context menu instead?
I don't know. Like it might be like a whole nother icon has appeared where that little menu pops up of where your thumb is on that screen, and then you also have the separate one of like where the trackpad icon is located at.
Yeah, and I think it's a really that is a really smart design decision to not make it capacitive or just like take an instant input, because that means you'll have to look down and look at it. The fact that you can do it without ever looking down, even though it's defaulting to the old technology of having to push it in to select, so actually it's a button, is a pretty cool move. It's like an Optimus keyboard, for example. And that's kind of interesting to me. Like, Squiddle, are you finished eating? Do you have any input in this part?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I had a chip in my mouth. I apologize. God damn you for going to cut over. No, but I mean, my biggest issue, and people have heard me on here before, is I played, what game was it? Anyway, I played a game on the iOS where I did, iOS. You know, streaming to the TV, and basically I tried to do it without looking down.
Yeah.
You know, because I tried to like...
Oh, okay, yeah, it was Deus Ex.
I know Deus Ex, thank you, yeah. I know what this is doing. I know what this is doing. Okay, here we go. Mm-hmm. And inevitably, there was that point where I was like, okay, look down. What am I doing? Oh, I was missing it.
Oh.
So I hope they resolve...
Yeah, this kind of resolves that, right?
Has that thing like, you know... Maybe we know that every game does this, or they at least tell you that, you know, hitting in this quadrant does this, hitting this quadrant does that.
Yeah.
And it kind of adds like a programmers can map it to whatever they want, but they tell you up front, this is what it's going to do when you hit the left, top left, top right, bottom left, bottom right. And then you're just like, okay, it's another face button, essentially.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and that's what I'm kind of hoping for.
Cool. And so you touched on the last element of this whole thing, which is the community. So from front to back, top to bottom, Valve have been saying over and over again that they're going to involve the community with this whole process. So, for example, they believe that this interface can replace the mouse and keyboard, or at least be a viable option to the mouse and keyboard for almost every game that's available on PC. They think it will work for strategy games, etc. And the reason they think so is because they're going to leave it to the community to a large extent to make adaptations or workshop elements or whatever it is that interface with the controller and provide that back end for the controller to tap into and provide a good experience. So I'm betting that there's going to be whole user generated mappings and interfaces for that touchscreen and LCD in the middle that'll enable you to at least like approach the precision of a mouse and keyboard. Like, Therapolitan, do you think that's a good approach, and do you think that'll work?
As a person who doesn't make consoles or anything, I don't know. I am intrigued by it. I think it might work, but I have to wait until we get like the 300 Steam users get in their hands.
Exactly.
The touchscreen won't be working yet.
I can just see the System Shock community immediately going, okay, yeah, we'll do this, and then straight up just like make multiple different input variants and put that out for the controller. I can see some communities doing it. I just don't see, and obviously the Eurotruck guys will be all over that shit, but I don't think that like old RTSs, maybe obviously Age of Empires, those guys will do it as well. Like people, the community around those games will still support them. But there's a lot of games out there, like for example, Thief. I don't know if there'll be people who go back and make a really good interface adaptation for the Steam controller for Thief 1. For example, I don't know if that'll actually ever happen, or maybe would the Icewind Dale? I bet all the Elder Scrolls will be covered. So maybe. So it all comes down to the community, how people support it, if people support it, and how well it ties in with this controller. So let's wrap up. Doubleton, over under. Do you think this will actually be a good alternative to the mouse and keyboard?
No. I mean, like it's.
That's what I stand. Well,
I think it's going to be a good trump over other controllers when it comes to doing stuff related to a PC. But like, it's a tough balance because we want to be sitting down on our couch doing stuff.
Yeah.
But we don't want to be holding a laptop, or we don't be holding a keyboard and a mouse.
Yeah. And that's I totally agree.
And so it's like, what are we going to do? Hopefully this will work. But I think we're still like it's definitely an evolution of the controller. Hopefully it'll be a step towards whatever we want. Like, you know, I don't know. It's Minority Report style, just hand movement. I don't know.
Well, I vastly prefer this to motion. Like whatever this is, it's better than motion controls. Like this is a step in the right direction. At least if you're going to try something new. Squiddle, like, what are your thoughts? Do you think this will replace the mouse and keyboard?
I will say that there is nothing that can replace the mouse and keyboard, period.
Yeah, I agree.
But I will say that I am glad that someone is at least trying to do something that is different to incorporate people that use mouse and keyboard in a way that they're used to. So... and the other thing that I wanted to make mention on, which I linked just a few seconds ago in the thing, is that if you look in the Steam store and you look at the way they talk about the controller, that there is not one PS controller that is shown in the in the box. I mean, I see the 64, the NES, the Super NES, the Xbox, the Wii, and a joystick. But I don't see anything about the PlayStation. So I think Valve is pretty much saying, you know, fuck Sony. Who gives a shit about them? They don't make good products.
Man. this is the design doc, or how they ended up designing it, what looks of things.
Yeah, and I look at it as if they are taking more of the approach, like we're gonna take information from the community and make our product. I am happy about that. More so than I would say any big box developer saying that we're going to have teams that come in and design the controller and basically make a controller based off of what has worked in the past. For them to take this gigantic step and to say, give us your input. What do you think? Does it work? Yeah. No. Yeah. Okay. We'll change it. Yeah. I mean, to kind of have that, that Kickstarter vibe a little bit essentially to it really gives me hope to say that this is going to be something that's really cool. And then hopefully evolutionize the entire process of what Steam is and what the Steam OS is and what the controller is. So I'm optimistic, maybe to a fault, but
no, we need an optimist here to balance me out, you know.
Next, yeah, so. I mean, I'm hoping to see good things. So,
do you guys think that in say flash forward 5 years, do you think there'll be a large penetration of? Let's just round out the whole topic by saying, do you think there'll be a large penetration of SteamOS or the Steam machines, and do you think that PC gamers will be using like a console controller or one of these? Squiddle.
I will use it as a supplement. So if I'm sitting in my chair, mm-hmm. I will have the controller out in my other room. If I'm sitting in my chair and I want to play a game, but I'm too lazy to get up and go to my computer to do it, then yes, I will use it. Will it replace my gaming aspect of on my computer mm-hmm. in general? No. I don't think it will. And I will state that right now that because I don't know what it is that they're trying to do, I don't know what it will become. I will say that I will still be here on my mouse and keyboard. Playing video games, but on those one-off times where I just want to play it on my TV because I don't want to get up, then hey, it'll be there for me, and I'm happy about that.
Let's just throw like a ballpark figure out here. I think there's around 70. Let's just say the Steam community is about the size of the Xbox 360 controller, like the hardcore Steam community, not like everyone uses Steam, but the hardcore Steam community is about the same size as the Xbox 360 community. So you're looking at around 70 million people. How many people do you think will be running SteamOS every day and using the Steam controller? Like, just give me just a balls out, straight up a guess, Squiggle.
I would say, would you say 70 million?
Yeah, 70 million is currently probably the size of the Steam base.
Probably 20 to 25.
Sure.
To be honest, I'm not going to try to overstate it, but I'm going to say 20, 25 million would probably be what I would expect of the tinkerer people, or the people that are going to the early adopters,
right,
per se, that are going to actually jump on board and say, we're going to try this.
Cool.
So that's what I feel.
That sounds like pretty cool estimates. Guesses. Thurbleton.
I'd swing along that same ballpark. I was actually thinking like 15 to 20.
Yeah.
Just looking at the basic, like a line of like, okay, there's people who don't use Steam or Valve products too much, Steam products too much. Then there's like the middle of the tier, like the valley of, yeah, we'll be using it. And then there's the other end that is like the PC enthusiasts, the crazies, like, you know, myself and Squiddle, and we'll probably like, you know, build this, put it into OSs and whatnot.
Yeah.
What we'll be using it for, how far down like will the usage will be, the integration. Mm-hmm. That's one of the nice parts about Steam is you can play with how much you want to use it.
Yeah. How about the controller? Do you think people will be using instead of the Xbox 360 controller going forward?
Well, I mean, 5 years down the line, we didn't even know if Xbox is going to be like a thing.
No, that'll be the thing. That's within the generation. That'll be the end of the current console generation. So I think it's
I will state that if Steam, if Valve makes the controller an integral part of its platform, much like Apple has made the iPhone an integral part of its platform, of course, because they develop it, they make it, they manufacture it, they sell it, then yes, it will be something that, well, I will say, well, of course I need this to play my games. And every game that comes on Steam will have the API to say, we need to code it for this controller.
Yeah.
If it was something like, and I will go back to it, as a Mad Catz controller, and I say that not based on that, you know, we know that maybe Mad Catz is kind of made it towards the PS3 or the Xbox, but if the company says, if Valve says, you know, this is the API, build your game to at least use this API interfaces, then I'll use it. I mean, I don't see a point where I will say I need to use a PS or Xbox 360 controller with my Valve games or games that Valve or Steam put out anymore if they make it readily available to developers to say, Let's develop it for it, and then we have it, and it works well.
Yeah, and I'd be pretty much along same as I think. Under 10 million will have a dedicated SteamOS machine. I think around maybe that amount over that will have a part time machine, so maybe a dual boot or something like that, or have definitely tinkered with it. So I think around 20 million people would have tinkered with it. And as for the controller, I think that if it's like something really new and gets buzz behind it, like the Oculus Rift, And if it just gets people excited, it could be pretty big. I think it could take like half the PC market away from Microsoft. Just like from straight off like the point of people just not want, just being bored of the Xbox 360 controller. Cause that's been around for 7 to 9 years. So people are just already getting bored with it or considering replacing the Xbox One controller, maybe even a PS4 controller. So I can see about 20 to 35 million people using these Steam controllers if they work well and if they're really cool. But these are all ball guesses. So it's going to be interesting to see.
I will state right now that I was thinking, you know, I can't wait until Xbox releases their controller for PC interface because you know they will.
Yeah.
They will have one that will, of course, either, you know, you buy it. This is the PC controller. This is the Xbox 360 controller.
Yeah.
I am more looking forward to purchasing one that is the Valve, quote unquote, controller because I feel that it will work just as well, if not better. But I also feel that, you know, I don't like – even though I play games on Windows, I like the idea of a company where I play my games through Valve and they make the product that I will stick with them through thick and thin with it. So, yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to it and using it.
Cool. And as for me, I can see myself using my PS4 controller on my PC. I think that's going to be my standard just because no matter what this does, it does not have a D-pad. It does not have good tight analog sticks, and that is how I think I will like my gaming pretty much forever forward, especially since I've played with the 3DS for a bit. Using that D-pad is just, Nintendo makes some of the best D-pads in the world, and this I hate the slip pad, which makes me think I'll probably love control like analog sticks forever. So I think I'll just be using my PS4 controller, especially since that's confirmed to work with the PC, and I'm sick of my Xbox 360 controller because I've had it for ages. So that's where I see myself being, but you know what? Even I'm going to try dual booting into SteamOS. I'm going to definitely put it on one of my hard drives to see how that works, and even just to be able to talk about it. So I'm definitely going to try it out, and I'm going to be really interested to see which, because they've said a lot of high profile games coming up will be announcing SteamOS support. I'll be very interested to see not only the games that are supported, but also the performance differences to see if they can actually deliver, put their money where their mouth is, and actually deliver something above and beyond what you get from Windows. But in the end, no, I need my Excel. I need my Audition to produce this podcast. I need like Premiere to produce videos. Like I need those programs. Those will never be on SteamOS, so it'll never be my primary machine. And with that, I think we have one more news topic, but it's optional. Do you guys want to talk about the Diablo thing? I think it's kind of interesting, but I don't know if you have time.
We can cover it. It is an interesting thing when you talk just briefly about it. Like, what is interesting about it to you?
It's interesting to me because I had the feeling that this was required for Diablo 3 whilst playing Diablo 3. When it got to the point where I made the conscious switch to move from using my drops to using only the auction house, which happened at about halfway through Nightmare, that's when I was like, this is stupid. This is a bad system. Because when it got to
the point... anybody who doesn't know, it's the right now if you get in and play, you'll be getting a lot of loots that are just crap you don't want or need.
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
and so you put those on the auction house to sell, and then you buy stuff off the auction house that you want.
Let's rewind even further. So we're talking about Blizzard announcing Loot 2.0.
It was going to be called Blizzard back in the day. They made a game called Warcraft Humans and Orcs.
Then they made a
game called Diablo.
Shit.
Is Blizzard still around? Is that a thing? Are they?
They're trying to go.
Aren't they a card game company at this point? Is that what you're hearing?
You know what? Yeah. That thing is going to be so big.
It seems interesting that they're getting rid of a way to make money.
Exactly.
In light of them losing a lot of people for World of Warcraft, their big cash cow.
Yeah. So Diablo 3 auction house, everyone knows about it. They're stripping that out of the game because they cite user feedback, and I think also, you know, hacking issues for people.
About fucking time.
Yeah, I know. For people just going, fuck it, this is making the game worse, not better, and they're taking it out and putting in a new loot system. So people don't know already, the console versions of Diablo 3 actually have the new loot system in them, at least a early version of it, and it seems like the reaction from that, at least from what I understand, has been largely positive. So you're getting back to the Diablo 2 days where the best shit you get is the shit you find from killing shit, And that's what that's the loop people want from their Diablo-ass Diablo. They want to go in, kill shit, get them perp drops, look at them perps, and go, wow, ain't that some awesome perp action.
Wait, you mean when you make a new game, you don't take what you learned from the previous game and actually introduce it into the game that newly created?
No, apparently if you're Blizzard, you take everything people love and then chuck it in the gutter and make it something slightly different, but find a way to make money from it. And then only after that realize that people didn't like that and then revert back to your previous design
process. I mean, I think a little bit was is like they've been doing World of Warcraft for so long with the idea, like if you look back at all the different updates of World of Warcraft,
yeah,
they made some crazy stuff both patches and expansions. It's just like, hey, we're completely redoing this entire class sort of thing, or we're completely changing this mechanic. So having that mentality for so many years and then taking like dusting off Diablo 2 to make Diablo 3, I can imagine they thought the same thing and they need to remind themselves that, hey, this is two different separate games.
Yeah. And at some point in there, until post-release, they kind of forgot about the core gameplay loop that made Diablo successful. Like, they thought maybe they didn't think this, but they wanted to try a different spin on it, and apparently that different spin didn't work. And I could have told them
if you want to put a different spin on it, don't use the same game series.
Yeah.
Make a new series. Make a new IP.
Yeah, make a new fucking IP. God damn it.
You'll piss off fans. No, but I think a lot of it might also be because they were doing it, releasing it on consoles as well, and having worked through those stores probably might have been a hassle. Extra server costs for...
Oh, definitely. Yeah, that could be part of it. Yeah. But the direction has been positive, and it sounds like you're going to get the Diablo 3 you always wanted with the next expansion. So this is all going to happen mid-2014-ish with the new expansion. It's going to update near then, and you're going to get the new loot system for free, whether you get the expansion or not, because they're shutting down the auction houses entirely. Did you guys play Diablo 2? Like, are you guys big Diablo 2 guys? Because I was.
No.
No.
Yeah.
No.
I was.
At the time, I pretty much said fuck Diablo 2 because everybody was shoving it down my throat. And that's how I go about a lot of things. If someone says, you got to play this. Hey, play this game. I'm like, no, I don't.
Just overwhelmed. Yeah. I don't want to touch it. Yeah. I can see that.
Just like, leave me alone. Why am I going to play this game? You're telling me to play it? No. Obviously, it's not a good game if the general public is saying you have to play this game. Mm. That's kind of how I've always taken a lot of things.
But Diablo 2 is possibly one of the best games ever made, so...
in retrospect...
You know, I don't know.
I probably wish I would have played it.
But seeing
the new DLC they're going to be releasing for it, I am stoked to go back and play Diablo.
That was kind of it, because like for me, Diablo 2 was a formative game, but it was formative in a period where I wasn't too critical. So early 2000s when I would have played it, I was in the middle of high school, just made a bunch of new friends, and they played Diablo 2. So they were like, hey, play Diablo 2 with us online. I was like, holy shit, you can play games online? And that was how big of a leap it was for me. It was the first game I played online with friends. So for me, it was one of those crazy things where it was a whole new world because I never played Diablo before. So I got used to like the world, the experience, everything that surrounded it, the loot system. I played Necromancer. I played with my friends. It was like a whole thing for me. But in the years since, when I went back to Diablo 2, my gaming tastes have changed, or just like some parts of it just have become too transparent for me. And I can see those systems for what they are. I can see the loot grind and see like how that ties into their model for endgame. And I can look at the class balance and see how like some classes are clearly better than others and look at all those aspects of it and be critical and say it probably isn't as good a game as I remember it being. And in fact, before Diablo 3 came out, I had no intentions of buying Diablo 3 because I honestly don't really find Diablo 2 that great anymore. But when Diablo 3 came out, I gave that a shot. And obviously, I've brought it up previously in my Torchlight 2 discussion. I wasn't too great on it at the time. I'm not surprised that I wasn't. But looking back at it, it was actually a pretty good game in some of the elements of its online design. So for people out there who haven't tried Diablo 3, I think that don't jump into it now. Like, there's no reason to... There's no, like, oh, jump in before the auction house closes because this is how it was meant to be played. No.
Give it a shot next year in March. That's when the update will hit and the expansion... Yeah. Well, that's when the expansion hits and when the community will be much more active, and exactly. You can maybe like get some friends going, meet some friends in the game. It'll be fun.
Yeah, so new people will be there. You have, the servers will be live again, like alive again, and then you have a bunch of people to trade with. And all that. I hope they put in a good trading system, because that was the other core tenet of Diablo 2, which is trading between players, especially since you're getting most of your drops yourself.
Yeah, they've said like that's. People are like, oh, well, what if we want to get gear and whatnot? You can still do those private trades on forums and whatnot of meeting on worlds. It's still always going to be online.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's Diablo 2's.
Oh, man. Yeah, so I'm pretty damn excited for Diablo 3 expansions. and with that, that looks like the show this week. Anything else, you guys? Anything else? I don't know. Steam for people. Persona 5's coming out. I think I talked about that earlier, but, you know, that's going to be announced, I think. It might not be. It might be fucking something, some random side spin-off thing. But I think it's Persona 5 going to be announced.
So. Snoochie Boochies. That's all I got to say.
What the fuck?
He's referencing Jay and Silent Bob.
Thurbleton, any plugs for the week?
I'm going to do a weird thing and plug something called the Spelunky's Explorers Club.com or Spelunky Explorers Club.com.
What? Okay. What is it?
Okay, so I don't play Spelunky.
Okay.
But I enjoy watching Spelunky, and I found out about this. It's a website that Tom Francis, maker of Gunpoint, as well as a few other folks, a few guys from the PC Gamer UK office, I think like Nika Harper of Riot Games. Basically, they play the Spelunky Daily Challenge, which is a thing with the Spelunky PC version of whatever you play, it's a random generated seed,
right.
Except for the daily thing, in which it's a set seed every day that basically you can compare your performance and your skill to what everyone else is playing.
How long is it? Is it one world or just one level?
It's a seed. So it's basically there's four levels for each world.
Wow.
And you can play all the way to the end, but it's sort of like beating the entire game, beating the end boss isn't necessarily the only feat. You could do other crazy things like go to the UFO is one thing. I kind of need to play that game. But at the same time, I like not playing the game and learning about all this stuff through different media. But anyway, what these guys do is basically they record them playing the game for each day and then post it on YouTube. And they're all collected and posted up on this website that's made through, I don't know, WordPress
stuff. Yeah.
Wait, so what was the site again?
It definitely feels WordPress-ish.
The Spelunky Explorers Club. Spelunky spelled just the same way as the video game, S-P-E-L-U-N-K-Y Explorers Club.com.
.com. So one word, Spelunky Explorers Club.com. Squiddle. Any plugs?
You know, now that I'm not doing my stuff at work, of course, you can follow me on Mr. Squiddle at Twitter. I'll be posting some more stuff on there, random BS and stuff like that. Cool. But other than that, no, that's about it.
Cheers. And for me, I've got one plug, and it's not a book this week, as opposed to the last like 3 weeks running. Brothers: A Tale of Two Sons, the video game. So Brothers: A Tale of Two Sons, their soundtrack is now out. So you actually purchased that, let me see. I will look up the URLs, etc., and put that in the show notes. But yeah, that's finally out, and it's a pretty good soundtrack, so check it out.
Wait, what did you call it? URL?
URL?
You okay.
In the... Did I call it URL? Maybe I don't know.
You call it URL. I heard URL. I'm like, what, URL?
I don't know. Okay. I slur.
That's fine.
And obviously, I'll be putting
p-ch.jp
in the... show notes as well, so check out that if you want to see a date with the Persona logo in the bottom left hand corner like I do, because I'm staring at it right now. And as Thurpleton said, goodbye.
Well,
what you said,
don't you come back no more.
I didn't understand
don't you, come back no more.
You can't mean that,
don't you come back no more.